Just heard Hometown by Witch, which is introducing a very special show for today's Blaxploitation Lounge. Okay, so welcome to a very special edition of the Blaxploitation Lounge here on Slack City Radio with me, your hostess Afrocat. And to start with, I've got a very special guest in the studio who's going to have a little chat with me about one of my favorite psychedelic Afro bands, Witch. So I'd like to welcome Gio Arlotto.
Thank you. Thank you. Very happy to be here.
Oh, thank you for coming. And I've just caught Gio as Witch are performing tonight, which I can't wait to see. over at Chalk. And so I thought I'd take the opportunity to invite you down and see if I could get a little insight into your work with Witch and the band themselves as well.
Sure.
So you've directed, I came to know about you through a screening of a documentary on them that I watched. So you, were you the filmmaker?
I was a bit of everything, you know. Well, if I start from the start, I first heard Witch music in about 2012 when it was first reissued by Now Again Records. Just through a friend sending me a song, saying the song was Strange Dream, saying, I think you would like this. And obviously I did.
Yeah, you really liked it.
Yeah. I fell in love with the sound. I found it very, I was listening to a lot of psychedelic rock already at the time, but not really anything that was not from, let's say, the UK or the US. So for me, it was very interesting to see how those influences were, the influences of, say, the Beatles, the Stones, and like the big names were reworked in other parts of the world. And so I found Zamrock, and in that I found the most extreme version of that, because it's something that's very unique to Zambia. They were obsessed with fuzz pedals and the heavier side of the spectrum of the psychedelic rock. And so I found that, and I found it very interesting, but it was sort of at the back of my head. And then a couple of years later, some friends of mine were doing a marketing expedition for some trucks in Africa, starting from Angola and ending in Djibouti. And they needed an extra driver and a photographer and asked me to come along, and I said yes. But then I found out we were passing through Zambia. And I was like, oh, Zambia, Witch, Zamrock. When is that going to happen again? At the time, I was also... I had a music blog where I was making videos of bands that I like that pass through Milan, which is where I'm from. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, maybe I'll get to meet some of them and shoot like a short session of them playing a song, Strange Dream in that case, because that was my favorite song. And then I was like, well, while I'm at it, maybe I can ask a couple of questions. And because I was very curious of how that music was made, what were the social, political sort of elements that drove that to happen, what their tastes were, and like what it was. And so I started asking a few questions with Jaggery. We spent 2 weeks together. I was there by myself for 2 weeks with him. He took me everywhere from his childhood home to where the band used to live, to the venues that were there. And by chance, or well, maybe it wasn't chance, but at the time, this was October 2014. And the 24th of October 1964 was when Zambia became independent. So it was the 50-year jubilee. And they had organized a Zamrock concert. So there was all the surviving, sadly few Zamrock musicians that were still there that all grouped together in a big stage and performed. So I got to meet a lot of other Zamrockers and got to know a bit of the feel of what was happening at the time. And then it became evident that, you know, Jaggery and Witch were sort of the Beatles of Zambia, or the Rolling Stones of Zambia, the most important band, although there was a lot of other bands as well. So I decided to follow Jaggery, and, you know, I came back to Milan afterwards with a lot of material and, you know, with the intention of editing and making a documentary. But then I spoke to a friend of mine that was a producer, and I showed him the footage. He's like, well, you know, the music, I love music. So it was very focused on the music, like the changes between the third and fourth album and stuff like that. But he was like, well, you know, that's interesting, but also Jaggery's life story is fascinating, because he really led a very diverse life. You know, he was the biggest rock star in his country for a while, and then he became a university professor for a while. Then he was jailed for a wrong accusation for a brief amount of time. Then he couldn't work for the government anymore, the governmental institution being the university. So he became a gemstone miner, and that was that's all he was doing until the reissues came out, you know. And so, like, you know, with the whole dream thing, you know, and everything, like, it felt like his dream of being a musician was just put away somewhere in a closet. And then, you know, there was a few things that I saw in him that, you know, made me realize he is a rock star, and he needs to be a rock star. He needs to be on stage, you know. And so I kind of vowed it to myself that that's what I would try and make happen. And here we are,
amazing.
I guess.
That's absolutely amazing. And just like the synchronicities of it being the fifth year and there being a Zamrock concert. It was all put in place. So we've got that favorite track of yours up next. Here's Strange Dreams by Witch.
sure to hide my face and life felt so nice. Sat under the mountain seeing water run, and we saw snails being caught. All of a sudden the devil kissed my face. Ooh, she was gone.
Three new musicians.
Well, there's
really
more than that. There's only two original musicians, let's put it that way. So basically what happened is one has decided to go back to Zambia the second time with a bigger crew, not by myself, and shoot something more proper. At the same time, there was Yako Gardner and Nico Mauskovich, which were friends of mine that another bit of synchronicity here. The day that I decided to go to Africa on that expedition, because I was still unsure, I was shooting a session with them in Milan, and we spoke about it. And they're like, well, you probably should do this, you know? And I did. And then we met up a year later. This was before I went back to Zambia. And at the time, they had gotten more into African music and African rock and roll and things like that. And knowing that I had traveled through Africa, they came up to me and they're like, well, you know, since you know Africa, you know, we'd really love to go to an African country, meet a musician from the 70s, play with him and possibly record something. I was like, yeah, you know, maybe Ethiopia is really cool because of Ethiopian jazz and everything. And I was like, wait a second. I'm already doing that in Zambia. Why don't we join forces? Yeah. And so we did. And they came down to Zambia and we did the first kind of witch concert since the 80s or something like that. So some of those songs that we played in that concert really hadn't been heard live in years, you know, and in decades even. And so we did that. And I was like, okay, great. The film is finished. So I go back to, my film was edited in Prague in the Czech Republic. I go back to the editor. I'm like, okay, we got the film. He's like, well, you're missing the third act. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, now that you brought some musicians from Europe to Zambia, you have to bring him to Europe and close the circle. Yeah. And so we did that. It took a while for it to happen, but then the tour went really well. We sold out quite a few shows and that's where the film finishes. But then the next year there was more demand for witch live shows because people had seen it, heard about it, they were very excited about it, just like I would have been if I was a fan rather than involved in it. And so basically bookers, and they were looking for somebody to speak to, and who they're going to speak to, me, I guess. So I kind of fell into the shoes of being their manager. And and so we toured Europe again another time. Then we did a US tour, And then 2020 hit. So we're put on
Right.
hold for a little bit. But then what happened then is Phil Perrone, who's the founder of Desert Days Festival in California, and also the founder of the booking agency we use in the States. We got in touch during the pandemic, and obviously working on two things that can't happen during the pandemic is he was like, well, why don't, it's like, are you guys wanting to record a new album? You know, do you have it in you? And obviously everybody did. And so we worked a few things there, and then we joined with a label, Partisan Records, who loved the idea. And we basically went to Zambia in what was it, November 2021, and we went back to the same studios that Witch used in the 70s, which were miraculously kept in place in completely intact conditions, and we recorded the new album there with the with the same
The
old.
same equipment. Yeah, I was looking at that. So it was a really meticulous effort to put all the equipment back
A lot of
together.
soldering,
Yeah,
a lot of that.
I was watching one. I think was it the original sound engineer that
Yeah,
was
yeah,
there that I
yeah.
saw, like I saw some video of him
Yeah.
and like just taking everything apart, talking about taking everything apart.
Exactly. He's a very meticulous man, so he's kept everything completely in shape. And those studios, DB Studios, they also have a room which is their archive. And that's the most complete Zamrock archive in the world because it's got everything that was recorded there and not only. And, you know, those records are hardly, like, mostly impossible to find in such conditions, you know, because, you know, what they, first of all, they didn't press that many back in the day, and they weren't really well preserved. So I've heard stories of when cassettes came to the market, people were like, okay, we don't need records anymore, and they just use them as
Oh, gosh, sacrilege. Oh,
frisbees, you know? So
that
yeah.
hurts.
And so, you know, when I was there, I was always on the hunt for records, not because I want to buy them and resell them, but just to have a collection of them myself and to hear some music that's never been digitized. But it's expensive, and it's very, a lot of crackles and dust in it, you know.
So I'm just about to start a project myself called Afro Cats Lost Tracks, A Cry to Addis, and it's really kind of a similar thing, maybe a different focus because my aim is to reissue rare 70s and 60s music from Ghana and
All
Ethiopia.
right, nice.
So I'm actually traveling there. I bought my
Okay.
ticket the other
Okay.
day to Ghana and like I'm going there for a month. I'm going to be DJing in
Oh,
between as
nice.
well. But it's just some of the similar things about going to old studios that I hope are still intact in that same way and still kept in a very, stuff that might not have been heard outside of it
Yeah.
in both countries. So how was that like tracking? Because part of my thing for this is going to be tracking down artists
Well, I
and
was very lucky to have Jaggery by my side because he knows everybody and everybody knows him,
Right.
you
So it's
know.
just one main guy I
Well,
need to
yeah,
find.
exactly. And because, you know, he was one of the most famous guys, music artists at the time. You know, everybody from his generation knows who he is, and he knows everybody there. So it's like, well, you know, we can go here, there, and you know, we often stumble across things that, you know, I would think about, but he wouldn't. And then we would find the right person that we could speak to. But it is definitely not so easy, I would say.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I guess it's something that you can probably just do more effectively once you're there as well,
No,
obviously talking
100%.
to people and
100% because communication can lag quite a bit
yeah.
if not. But yeah, I mean, I would suggest that, you know, finding somebody that's, you know, that worked in the music industry at the time, whichever, in whichever way, you know, either a producer or something like that, and then that will make things easier. Somebody that had a studio, an artist, obviously, you know.
One of the things I want to look out for, and I'd be interested to see if you came across it as well in Zambia, is women in music.
Yeah, sadly there was fewer in Zambia. There was one, Violet Kafula. She sadly passed a few years ago. She was a singer of a band called The Born Free.
Oh, I think I
Yeah, they
heard
have
of them.
the album with the crossbones, like a black one. It's pretty cool. And but there wasn't that many. It was pretty male dominated, I would say, Zamrock. There was also at the time that Zamrock was happening, well, towards the tail end of it, there was something called Kalindula, which is a different genre of music. It's more, in a very heathen term, like high lifey.
Okay.
You know, it's not, because it's very different. It's got more rumba and things like that in it. And there were a few more women involved. Just like in the later part of Zamrock, when it went towards more towards disco, mm-hmm. then there were more women, but very few in comparison. I think Ghana might have more, but in Zambia, there really wasn't that many.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see as well the difference between Ghana and Ethiopia in that sense as well, because I've seemed to have found more Ethiopian women artists.
I think so, because I mean, also because of the genre, maybe, you know, and the Ethiopian, like, it's jazzier, softer, maybe.
I don't know. It could get pretty hard and psychedelic in that sense, too.
But maybe what I mean to say is that's more melodic, perhaps, than harsh, you know?
Yeah. And,
I mean, this is like maybe a stupid thing to say, but like, I don't know. I felt, I mean, I don't know why, actually, there wasn't that many women involved, but. Violet, she was a badass.
Oh, good.
I met her a few times, and she would, she toured with Witch a few times, and she like kept them all under control and stuff like that.
Oh, well, did she sing and write and play as well?
She sang. I think she wrote a few songs as well, and she did a bit of everything. I'm not sure if she played an instrument, perhaps. But that's sadly the only woman I can think of in the genre, as I say, in Zamrock, in what's strictly known as Zamrock.
Yeah.
Which is...
I think it, like, generally there just might be hidden figures, like there are people behind it. Do you know what I mean? There must have been, because music in Africa is like very much a community thing, you know, and a family thing. And
no, for sure. You know, and what I'm talking about is recorded artists.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I mean. They're probably like behind the scene.
Yeah. Because, you know, In Zambia, just like in all around the world, there weren't like discotheques where people would play records. You know, the entertainment was live music.
Oh yeah.
So you know, which when they played, Jagger would tell me that their gig used to start at 8 p.m. on a Saturday and finish at 4 in the morning.
Oh, no. Because that sounds like my kind of gig.
Yeah, you know, they would take like half hour breaks here and there, have a smoke and relax, and then get back
and
into
then come
it.
Come back. Yeah, I was. Watching as well about the curfew that was on at one time during the late 70s.
Yeah, exactly. So like what happened there was that, I mean, Zambia was already liberated, but the countries around it weren't, and they were fighting their battles. And Zambia was harboring freedom fighters. So there was a few shots fired across the borders. And to avoid that, they had these blackouts where every light had to be out, so planes couldn't see where the cities were and stuff like that. And curfews, so everybody had to be in from 6 in the evening to 6 in the morning. And so that kind of killed the Zamrock movement in a way, because they could only play at something that they called a teen time, which is from 13 hours to 19 hours, you know. So it was during the day, and clearly people had to work during the day.
Yeah.
So there was only like teenagers or
school kids. Oh, is that why it was...
Well, I haven't really understood if it was teen time because of teenagers, or because there when they say 1 o'clock, they say 13 hours. So 13 hours,
or
14
between,
hours.
No, that's teen. Yeah.
So it was like that. And like, obviously there, like people were spending less money because it was younger people and so on. So the fees were smaller, and that kind of killed the whole live circuit. Up until the later 70s, like 79 or so, when disco kind of came on and they started having discos in Zambia. And there, what happened there was that often they would, like Witch, when they were a disco band, they would play an hour set, and then a DJ would play for like an hour or two, and then they'd play another set. And they had places that were incredible from what I hear. There was this one called Studio 21, you know, like Studio 54, but it was Studio 21 because it was on the 21st floor of one of these very brutalist buildings in Lusaka Center. And I hear stories of the elevators not working, so people had to walk up all the way or down all the way.
That's dedication to disco.
Yeah. But then with these amazing windows where we'd see the sunrise, must have been incredible.
Amazing. Yeah. And do you know if there was any... like lock-in, so like gigs from 6 p.m. and people can get out. Was that a thing?
Yeah, I mean, Jaggery hasn't really mentioned it, but other people have. So I'm sure there were, you know.
That sounds like a good one. Just like 12 hours. Yeah. Like partying. You can't get out. Yeah, nobody
exactly,
can leave.
Exactly. I'm sure that happened. That had to have happened, you know.
And so a lot of the other bands that you came across when you were looking through the studio, most of them passed away?
Most of them sadly passed away. And this might be a gross generalization, but this is what people say. So, you know, musicians led a bit of more of a free life and there were hippies and free love was there. And then sadly the AIDS pandemic hit Zambia really hard. So sadly, a lot of them, not all of them, obviously, but a lot of them passed away because of that. And now I would say that the surviving, I mean, also they're of a certain age because Jaggery is 72, for instance. But say of that whole scene, maybe 10% of them survive.
You know,
there is Jaggery, then there is Ricky Lilonga from Mozio Tunia, the other very big Zamrock band, and a few scattered here and there from smaller bands, but like another musician that was a very important musician in Zambia, Paul Ngozi, he passed away in 89 from AIDS. But he was, I don't know, because if you have like the Witch as the Beatles or the Rolling Stones, Paul Ngozi was, I don't know, the Sex Pistols or something. You know, he was like very punk. And he was also more of a musician for the people. So he was like talking about more... I'm not going to say proletarian aspects of Zambian life, but sort of people really reflected themselves in his lyrics.
Right.
And the music is, I mean, I really, really love his music. It's really raw. And like, sometimes just the production, like you can hear him like hitting the fuzz pedal. It doesn't really work. And then he hits it again. It's like in the mix, super loud, like blasting your ears or something.
Wake everyone. Good. Yeah.
And he, what he did is like after... He was one of the first Zamrockers for sure, and he did a lot of albums. But then towards the late 70s, early 80s, he started incorporating drum machines in his music as well. And then he went on to do more. Again, it's not exactly Kalindula that I was talking about before, but less Zamrock. I guess Zamrock, just like every genre, lasts for a certain amount of time before people get bored and moved on, tastes change and everything. So his music then changed into something else, which still has that rawness, even though it's more pop, let's say, but it's still got it there. And he was one that I really wish I could have met at some point because he seemed like a very interesting character.
Sounds like that would be amazing, actually. Any of his band members survived?
No, sadly not. His nephew survived and I met him a couple of times, but you know, he was young when Paul Ngozi passed. But
Did you come across, because I know that very few, there wasn't a record, is it a pressing plant in Zambia that had to go to Kenya
that's right,
to do it. So did you find more that there were like reel to reels and tapes in the studios of things that weren't on vinyl? Did you go through everything?
I mean, from what I hear, and I don't know if this is an urban legend or not, but when they wanted to reissue the Lazy Bones for the first time, with Now Again, they managed to find the master tapes, and legend has it that they managed to play it once and then it disintegrated.
that's what
I've heard. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not, but I mean, we didn't really find any of that stuff. I mean, there's maybe, because I have to say, in Zambia, the archives are not really well kept. Whether it's, I mean, apart from DB Studios where we were, which has, you know, it has the record collection, so those survived, but the tapes, maybe there is a few, but nothing really from the Zamrock era. And when I went, as you've seen in the film, to the national TV station to find some footage of the band playing back in the day, because they were on TV very often, that was a real mess, because it was this room with all these reels that they kept, but they didn't keep them all, obviously, because there would be have to be a huge warehouse, I imagine. So a lot of them, when they used it, when they were on TV, it was either broadcast live, or if they used the tape, then they had something more important to tape over. They would have taped over it, you know. And so it was really difficult. I mean, I went to the newspaper archives, like flicked through every single newspaper from the 70s trying to find a photograph, because even photographs, there aren't that many. I mean, I think I may have seen, I don't know, 10, maybe 15. No, I don't think 15. I think 10 photographs of Witch back in the day.
Gosh.
And
wow.
Some of them taken from newspapers, from the archives. I think it was kind of seen as a fad back then and maybe wasn't given the importance that we're now recognizing that it had. It wasn't really, it was more important to keep a tape of showing the sort of agricultural development or innovations that were going on at the time to make the country prosper, which is obviously great. But you know, now we're like, see Jagger in his prime. You know? Yeah.
What about like family photo? I guess like people didn't have cameras
People didn't have cameras. One day I met a guy. He's like, oh, you know, you were looking for footage back in the day. I was like, yes. He's like, oh, so back in the day, I was working for a TV station. I had a Bolex camera. Because I had it, I went to the Witch gig and I filmed it. I was like, oh, what? You know, amazing. He's like, yeah, but I just wanted to get a free ticket so I didn't put a tape inside. It's like, man.
Oh, no, why did he tell you in the first place? Exactly. It's worse than he told you.
Exactly.
To trick you into being excited. Seriously. Oh, no.
So, I mean, definitely home cameras. Video cameras were, I don't think anybody shot that. And I mean, if they shot that and they developed it and it survived, it would really be a miracle because, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, let alone photographs. I just don't think that many people maybe
would think about doing that.
So
not like now.
No, exactly. Now it's exact
it's
opposite.
Complete opposite. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that the whole era of Zamrock. What was the span of that from? Like,
well, I would say 72, 73 is when it really began, and I would say that. Zamrock, well, again, we have to like think about what exactly Zamrock is, right? Because Witch is often put in the Zamrock category because it obviously is part of that. But Zamrock is more using that, Zambian traditional instrumentation and rhythms with a rock and roll part.
Mm.
Now, Witch, at least in the first three albums, were more of just a rock and roll band, you know. They weren't using so many Zambian elements. It sounds groovier because the drummer is groovier, but it's not so much that. Then what happened? But other bands like Mozio Tunia, they were more Zamrock because they really had more of a. They really went a bit further from the rock and roll genre to make that. Now then, in 1975, if I'm not mistaken. Osibisa went to play in Zambia, and Witch opened up for them.
Okay.
So that was a big turning point for Jaggery, especially because he then realized that, like, oh, you know, Afro rock, we can do it in this way, and that was also the reason that why he went into academics, because he met Teddy Osei, the singer of Osibisa. And he went to him, he's like, why are you such a good musician? He's like, well, because I have a degree in music. Mm. And Jagger's like, oh, I got to get a degree in music and become a better musician. Thing is that at the time, the country being socialist, if you were to get a degree, you had to give back to the country by becoming a teacher. And that's what happened. But having said that, when Osibisa came, it kind of opened people's eyes. And if you hear the fourth album, Lukombo Vibes by Witch, there becomes really Zamrock, in my opinion. And the fourth album, Janet, also Zamrock. But so I would say that maybe to answer your question, from 72, 73 to about 78, something like that, then it went more disco. But the real Zamrock with real rock, I would say that the prime time is 74 to 76.
Okay. Because I was just like thinking about this, which I hadn't before. So it's exactly the same era as Blaxploitation.
Yeah, right.
Which is like this, the Blaxploitation land. So it was just such a special time in terms of creativity, but also just like harnessing people power and the power of revolution, and like massive change across the world in terms of liberation of certain countries. you know, so yeah, I think that is the golden era.
It is, but you know, something that obviously I've reflected upon many times and I've asked, you know, because when I first heard that, I was like, what would the older generation think, you know, when they saw this? These guys were rebelling and everything.
Yeah.
But when I spoke, it's like, well, we already won a revolution. You know, yeah, that was 10 years before. We just liked how it sounded and we liked writing like that.
We
liked
that spirit. You know, yeah,
so
sure.
Like they weren't, surely they were protesting against certain things about society, but it wasn't such a, so much of a change as I thought it would be, you know, like as you get punk in Europe or in something like that, which is completely changing what came before. But there was just more like finally young people having a bit of disposable income to do something different and seeing what happened the other side of the world and loving it and just recreating it. And the way they dressed, you know, I mean, sure, they sell pictures, but they also like, I think Deep Purple sound like this kind of trousers. So they would get that, you know, or something like that. So like it was all their imagination going into it. But like I always thought that like, oh, maybe the older generation would be like, what are you doing? Why are you wearing like high heeled boots or something, you know?
but they would not go for it.
Yeah, exactly. Who cares? You know, like enjoy, have fun, you know?
Because they got their signature hats as well. It's just to me, it looks like a flower petal.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what it's supposed to be? Or when did that?
They're like big sun hats that you wear.
they're just more practical.
Yeah, exactly. And then, I don't know, with Jaggery, he'll just like to having them because he was maybe a bit shy at first. And you would never say he's shy when you see him. And
he's not a shy man.
This
is not the first statue. Yeah.
But he would just say to like to hide a little bit or whatever. And then, you know, it also looks like a witch hat.
Yeah. It's got a double-edged hat there.
Yeah. So that's kind of that. But obviously, like the whole style of also the way they dress, the fashion style of Zamrock, it's very much an important element, you know, because they were inspired by that. But then it's not like they were buying clothes. They had tailors that custom made their own suits. So Jaggery told me that when they won, because there they had these agricultural shows, agricultural fairs or state fairs where bands would play and there would be a battle of the bands. And so when they won their first one, they all went to the tailor and got velvet suits made.
Oh, no, to celebrate. to celebrate. Like the sound of that.
And then like suddenly they're like, then suddenly everybody had velvet suits.
Oh, we've got to think of something new.
But yeah.
So did you, because you mentioned Osibisa.
Yeah.
And I used to know a few of them from Brixton.
All right.
Spartacus, who used to play bass.
Okay.
And Greg, who's still going with the band. Have you ever thought of doing anything again?
I've tried to get in touch with them, but I never succeeded. I really wanted to interview, see if they remembered playing in Zambia. But that would be, I mean, if it'd be a dream for Jaggery to see them again.
Yeah, meet
them
because again. I know that they're in Brixton. They're right in Brixton, town, South London. So, and I think they're still doing quite a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but I think Teddy Osei, he passed recently, didn't he?
Yeah, and actually Spartacus did as well. But I know Greg is going strong.
Okay.
With some stuff. Well,
you'll speak to Jaggery about it later. I'm sure he'd be ecstatic to you.
Well, it would be really great to meet him later at the gig, if that's possible.
Not for sure.
You know, I'd love to like say hello.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
And are you thinking of doing any more kind of African travels and or anywhere?
Travels, kind of yes. I would love to. I would love to do another film. That's my what I really want to do. It's just right now I just don't really have the time because Witch takes up a lot of it and I'm happy to go with it. I know I've got another film in me and eventually I will. I don't know if personally my second project will be another documentary because I'm afraid of repeating myself going somewhere and doing another thing. I mean, if any publication or any video outlet would like to commission me to do that,
I would love to do it.
but like if I were to start something on my own like I did, it's it was a lot of hard work. I mean, you know, this whole project started 10 years ago and we're still going strong, you know, so to sort of switch and focus on something else, it would be very difficult for me, I think, at the moment. I wouldn't be able to serve Witch as well as I am now and the other project, whatever it may be.
So do you do like an annual tour then? Which is that the kind of
this is the third tour of the year. We did one in the East Coast in June of the States, one on the West Coast in August, and now here. Then we're going to Australia in March, which is really exciting. But then the year before that, I think we did four tours, in three in the States and one in Europe. And so we're touring quite a bit, you know.
That's great that the demand's there, because this is music that really needs to be heard, and it's got real power behind it, real rawness.
And, you know, something that, you know, again, not many people expected to happen is the new album, you know, that came out. And it's the new first one, but definitely not the last one. So, like, that's something that we're working towards, to hopefully go record a second album and keep that going, which, as I'm sure you've heard the album, it's kind of a nice amalgamation of keeping true to the original Zamrock sound, while at the same time modernizing it a little bit and keeping it a bit more fresh. And it's something that we want to keep exploring also with further recordings, in the sense that we would like to involve maybe some producers in Zambia and some sort of younger generation, because we have the OG Zamrockers, but it's nice to sort of get that, because already in the band now, it's very, I mean, apart from being an intercontinental band, it's an intergenerational band. I mean, we've got Jaggery, who's 72, and the youngest member is 27, you know, so there is like a lot in there. But we also, you know, thing is, in Zambia, Zamrock is something that only the generation that lived it really knows it. The younger generations are completely unaware of it happening. What was good is we've been getting a lot of support from Sampa the Great. So like we did a track with her, and she did a track with Jaggery as well. And so that's sort of like bringing it to newer generations that are now starting to discover the heritage of their own country, which is, you know, it's something that was kind of our collective dream of us non-Zambians going to Zambia to sort of do something that maybe younger generation of Zambians could pick up on and like maybe start a Zamrock band, you know, which still has to happen, but maybe we're moving towards that direction, because it's such an important and unique cultural movement that the country had. And I think, I don't want to risk saying anything weird, but I think it might be the most important cultural movement that the country has had. So it's good to honor it. And now there is certain realities happening in Zambia. There is a Zamrock Museum that's being done with Jaggery and Ricky Lilonga doing a lot of mentoring to young people, showing them what Zamrock was, how it worked, and so on. So they're sort of passing on the torch to a younger generation, which is something that from the moment I met Jaggery, that's something that he told me he really wanted to do. His dream is, once we finally see some income come in from all of this, that's substantial enough for him to sort of make a Zamrock Academy, so to speak, to have a studio where he can mentor younger generations. And this is what, you know, Zamrock is. That's kind of what he really wants to do. And that's, you know, his dream that we're all trying to make come true in a way or the other.
Yeah, well, I hope it does come true. Yeah. You know, I mean, I'd love to, I'd love to visit that museum and see what's happening in the academy. But I think that's really important about, like, the younger generations. This is something that I think that I'm going to find as well when I go on my travels, that maybe it's not valued in the same way as like it deserves, or, you know, because everyone's striving to get the newest or the latest. But there's some, and that goes for here as well, actually. Like, there's a lot of treasures that could be, like, have shared ownership and enjoyment and value for, that I don't think is enough. So I think, and just the massive change that music was such a part of, powering all of that, all of those generations, and that change and that revolution, you know, which is what we need today. So the more Witch, the more Zamrock, the more anything from that era just seems to have something very special that, I mean, I hope that I can, you know, harness some of that and share some of that as well. So are you still with the band? Are you reissuing certain tracks that they did?
I'm not doing that. I'm managing them, strictly managing.
Are they reissuing?
Well, I mean, it's all been reissued, all the stuff that's been recorded. Now the focus is on newer material.
Right.
That's what everybody's striving to do. I mean, the all the 70s catalog has been reissued now for 10 years. So there isn't a hidden track that needs to be issued, yeah. Sadly. But or maybe there is, and we just haven't found it.
The cover tape one day. Yeah.
But now the focus is, I think Jaggery still has a lot to say, and right. Obviously yeah. the experience that he's living now, it's mind-boggling in a way, because it's what he had always dreamt about in his 20s, and he's doing it in his 70s, yeah. You know? So it's, he definitely has, and traveling the world, seeing all these things, he's so definitely amazing. Always, wherever we go, he reflects on like how people are and like, yeah. And everything. So I think he's definitely still got quite a few things to say, and he's writing songs constantly. Sometimes I tell him like, oh, how did you sleep last night? It's like, great. But then I woke up at 3, I had a melody in my mind, and I had to like sit down and write for a couple of hours. I was like, okay, yeah. Great. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be really exciting to hear what comes out.
And yeah.
Are they going to record back in DB Studios, or
well,
just analogy?
That's still very much up in the air. I mean, we would definitely like to record in Zambia again, because I think it makes sense to be in Zambia, because obviously, some of the band not being Zambian, it makes more sense if we're in Zambia, they can breathe the air, be in yeah. Zambia, and like really understand it more, you know, to make it make more sense. But the question of recording at DB Studios, I think we were very, very lucky with how it happened last time.
Yeah.
And if some small thing went wrong, like it would be very expensive and so on. So we will see. We're still planning on it, and we still don't really know. Also, like, the idea is to record another album, so we're just still working that out. So nothing is confirmed as of yet, although almost. But yeah, there.
So to close the show, would you like to share maybe one of your favorite tracks?
Well, I mean, I would have to go with "Strange Dream," which is
okay.
The one that
I thought you were going to say that.
but if I say that, then I would give you a couple more that I really love. Maybe one from the new album that I like a lot is called "Streets of Lusaka,"
okay.
And it's a more of a kind of dubby song in the album.
So here's that deliciously dubby track, "Streets of Lusaka," now.
Down in your sand.
Song with Sampa the Great, Avalanche of Love, is also, the first time I heard it, when they played it, I was like, wow, blown away. And then perhaps from the older catalog, there's one that's a very moody song called Evening of My Life. It's nice, but it's, you know, it's a bit maybe heavy in some ways, but I really love the whole catalog. I know every song by heart.
Yeah,
by
I was just going to say, you must know all of the catalog.
Yeah, but it's all good. So I would suggest that the listeners dig into it wherever they want, and it's all there.
And in terms of some of the artists that you mentioned, so there's Mozzie. What about like a track from like them, Born Free? What would
I don't remember the name of it, but I will tell you. Okay.
I might play some anyway. I'll play some anyway.
But there is from Polengozi, the one I was telling you with the crazy fuzz.
Yeah.
It's called Kumanda Pango Kunda or something like that. If I type it, I know it. But, but then he's also got another song, which is called Help Me, which is great. He says, and again, strange lyrics, like, maybe there's a hippie trying to kill me.
Oh, no.
I don't know, like, really random things. And if not, what else is there? Well, there's another band that I really like called The Tinkles. And they were sort of another kind of bubblegum band, kind of like Witch was at the beginning. That's what they called it bubblegum, because it was more just like three-chord rock and roll. And they were together with Witch, and Witch were like, from what I've heard when I've spoken to people, Witch were like the dangerous version of that, and the Tinkles were the clean cuts.
Oh, right. Okay.
But they have a song called You and Me, which is really, really good.
Is it a bit raw? It's got a bit more raw.
No, it's pretty groovy. I DJ it sometimes at night and people dance. So.
Okay, all right. I have to check that.
Yeah. It's rock and roll, but it's not... Yeah, it's great.
It's not hard, is it?
No.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you so much.
I've really
enjoyed chatting with
Likewise.
You. Thank you for taking some time out.
Of course.
Down to the Blaxploitation Lounge. And I can't wait for the gig later.
Yeah.
It's going to be really, really fun.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you
again.
So much.
Yeah, you're welcome. And last up to close the show, my selection, again, from their first album, Introduction, which they self-produced in 1972. This track is That's What I Want.
Ah,
Meditation Land. We'll be back on air on Slack City on the 29th of December. Till then, one love, bless.